Welcome, my friends, to the Generations Radio broadcast. This is Kevin Swanson, and I'm the host of the program, but more importantly, a father of five. We homeschool our children out here in the Eastern Plains of Colorado, half for the last 14 years. And Dave Buhner, also in studio with me, another dad of five. And we look at the world through the eyes of a biblical worldview, a safe distance here from the demise of Western civilization. And I do get the Wall Street Journal, so I get connected to life from time to time and figure out what's going on in the world. And, Dave, to tell you the truth, I don't really spend a lot of time in the newspaper because it's pretty much the same stories all the time. Somebody commits a fraudulent act, somebody else murders somebody else, and a terror event usually happens somewhere in the world. And, again, we see the same thing happening here. Deadly day in Baghdad. We had 147 people. I think it's 155 was the latest number I got. 155 dead after another bombing in Baghdad. The Amish, again, doing what the Amish do best. You know, that peaceful religion, I tell you, you just can't trust the Amish.
Wow. Well, the Amish built a bomb in Baghdad.
Yeah, yeah.
And they killed civilians.
Lots of them.
Why would they do that?
I don't know. You know, again, I think it was George W. Bush who called them a peaceful religion. Didn't he talk about the Amish?
As a peaceful religion?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I guess they are peaceful.
Yeah, but I just don't get it. And you go over all the other events, and by the way, there have been 199 terrorist events in the world since January 1st of this year. So far this year, almost 200 terrorist events. And, Dave, you know, here, let me just kind of work my way back. A suicide bomber out in Pakistan kills eight. Here's another.
An Amish one?
I guess, yeah, this would be a Pakistani Amish, again, the peaceful religion. I just don't get it. A gunman out in Pakistan kills two. Six people die in an attack on the International University in Islamabad. Again, Amish, I guess. 31 people died in an attack somewhere in Sistan, Baluchistan.
Easy for you to say.
Oh, man. More than 20 militants attack police facilities in Pakistan. So, yeah, there you go. 37 dead there. A suicide bomber strikes in Shangla District out in Pakistan, killing 41. That was October 12th. That's just the last week.
Those Amish are industrious.
I tell you what, they're all over the place. Folks, again, I have to take issue with George W. Bush. I'm just not getting this peaceful religion gig. And folks, terrorism has been around the world since 1900. In fact, it's been there since the beginning of time. These are anarchical attacks on the part of people who hate people and hate each other, and they can't seem to get along with each other. And the first 50 years of the 20th century produced 20 events. That's right. For 50 years, you had 20 events, and the 20 terrorist events at the beginning of the 1900s were people who were anarchists, Zionists, and racists. And, of course, anarchists are really communists who still aren't
funded,
right?
Yeah.
So then in the 1950s, you had nine events, 1960, 16 events. But in 2009, 199 events so far. Folks, we are in one of the most frightening times in the last 100 years. We have major terrorism happening all over the world, and it seems to be happening in Muslim nations. Now, we've been joking a little bit about the Amish. Forgive us if you're an Amish and you've been listening to the show. We really meant to say Muslims. Well, anyway, folks, terror is hitting the modern world, and it is hitting America to some extent. God has preserved this nation tremendously over the last several hundred years. In fact, Dave, we have not been invaded by a foreign nation since the War of 1812. We, of course, had the terrorist attacks upon the Twin Towers back in, 2001, and that was a terrorist attack on our soil. And we have had a few isolated attacks. This year, I believe we had one or two. There was a Muslim who shot some people about 2-3 months ago. I think it was in August. And then we had maybe one or two other shootings that could be classified as a terrorist event in the year 2009. But for the most part, we have been free from these sorts of things. And I think it's largely because we have more Amish here than Muslims. I think that's probably the major reason why America hasn't had the problems that Pakistan and Indonesia and the Philippines and Iraq and Iran and all these other nations are suffering. And, folks, I'll tell you what, I see pictures like this, and, Dave, this, This guy is weeping on the front page of the Wall Street Journal. I feel bad about these people. I mean, they live through these terrorist events sometimes two, three times a week. And this is a horrible, horrible thing that happens to these nations, most of them, of course, controlled and populated by Muslims. Folks, 20 terrorist events from 1900 to 1950. Not even one event a year from 1900 to 1950. And now we're seeing terrorist events every day, 199 just this year, and we're not done with 2009 yet. Ladies and gentlemen, what is happening? Why is the world filled with far more terror today than ever before? Why the terrorism? Well, a number of reasons. One is governments are far more tyrannical today than ever. You say, what in the world does that have to do with anarchy? Tyranny has everything to do with anarchy. As government gains more centralized control, as they begin to force different tribes together under one nation, and jamming them into Iraq. And Dave, you know you've got the Shiites, the Kurds, and the Sunnis all engaged in conflict in Iraq because you've got these gigantic centralized modern nation states that said, we're going to jam everybody together in the same country. We will tyrannize them. We will centralize control over them. And the end result, of course, is far more anarchy. So governments, I believe, control far more of the gross national product of economies today. This spawns far more anarchy. Tyranny is breaking God's law on the national basis. And that encourages individuals and smaller groups to just break God's law, too, in what we call terrorist events. Tyranny plays off of anarchy. And as we begin to see tyranny grow, and we have talked about that ad nauseum for the last 6 years of this broadcast, yeah, modern nations are filled with tyranny. We have far, far, far more government today in all the developed nations we've ever had in the history of the world. Far more tyranny today. Governments control far more of the gross national product today than ever before. And as that happens, of course, you're going to see far more anarchy at the same time. Dave, I think one more reason why we have more terror today than ever before is because we have more technology, more know-how. People know how to build bombs. I mean, you just go on the Internet, and within 30 seconds, I'm sure you can get your Bomb 101 class, and somebody's moseying up to the kitchen sink and pulling some chemicals together, and they're doing their thing. And that sort of thing, people didn't have access to the kinds of materials and the kinds of technological know-how that they have today.
Well, I think that just equips bad people to do bad things.
Yeah, it does. And, of course, technology is a two-edged sword. God, in his sovereignty and God in his goodness, has given us great access to technology. And I think that's been a good thing in many, many ways. But, of course, everything is a two-edged sword. Every form of technology can be a two-edged sword and be used for good and for ill. And so there are people out there who do not have good character and wind up becoming really good terrorists. That's one reason why I emphasize the importance of character in the education of children. And what would happen if you abandoned character in a bunch of public schools in America, say, and you didn't really focus on character? You really weren't all that interested in the fear of God as the beginning of wisdom and knowledge. And you, well, let's just say you educated 180 million kids who didn't fear God, didn't honor their parents, didn't really learn how to get along with their siblings, and wound up killing one another in the years to come. Well, if you gave them intellect, if you put them in public schools and gave them a bunch of knowledge, they might use that knowledge badly. You might be raising a bunch of smart terrorists. That's the last thing I want to do. So, of course, character is essential in the education of a child. And when I say character, I mean a biblical sense of character. The laws of God, the laws contained in the Old and New Testaments of God's Word, I believe, is the essence, the very source of morality. But we've abandoned that as a nation, and I think we're going to be hurting for it in years to come. All right, here's the third reason why we've got so much anarchy and tyranny out there. People are congregating more in large cities today. I mean, think about this. Dave, I don't think you would have people gone out into the fields in the Middle Ages, you know, 1430, found a farmer out there plowing all by himself and say, oh, let me lob a bomb at this guy. That kind of thing didn't happen very often. Just because you didn't have people congregating as much as you do today. You have 336 cities, over a million people in this world today. You've got 3,000 cities over 100,000. I mean, that's huge. You didn't have one or two cities over 100,000 in the year 1700. Now you do. Now you have thousands and thousands of cities over 100,000. That means people are congregating. Where there are people, of course, you can bet there will be anarchists. There will be people who would love to lob a bomb in the middle of the crowd. And today, over 50% of the world's population, folks, live in cities. I think it went over 50% in the year 2008. I think we did a program on that. More people live in the cities today than ever before. In 1900, 12% were urbanites. Only 12%. Now we're 50%. In 100 years, there were 12% of people living in cities in 1900. Now, over 50% of those in the world population now live in cities. And, Dave, this, of course, contributes to an opportunity for more anarchy as well. You centralize people in cities, you're going to wind up with more terror. That's inevitable. Folks, there's a reason why there were only 20 terrorist events from 1900 to 1950, and now there are 199 terrorist events just in the last 8-9 months. Incredible. Well, when we get back, one more reason why there are so many terrorist events today, and that's because 98% of the terrorist events this year have been performed by Muslims. Huh? Can you believe that? 98% of the terrorist events in 2009 performed by Muslims. And it's a peaceful religion to boot. Be back in just a moment to talk about this. Stay with us. Folks, we are in the middle of the greatest recession since World War II. Unemployment continues to rise after 22 months of recession. Will the national bailouts and the massive redistribution of the wealth into irresponsible banks really help the situation? Will John Maynard Keynes' fractional reserve indebted system work out in the long run? I mean, he didn't think it was going to work in the long run. If you're a Christian father and mother and you care about the future of your children and grandchildren, I'm telling you, it's time to work on Plan B. That's why we're doing a Family Economics Conference coming up here on March 5th and 6th, 2010. This will be a hands-on, practical conference bringing biblical perspectives to bear in every area of family economics. We're talking work. We're talking family entrepreneurism, debt-free living, contractual employment, inheritance, being a faithful employee, taking care of aging parents, living without Social Security, which, by the way, will happen, saving and investments, retirement, family charity, education, mentorship, taxation, health care decisions, seeking employment, raising dominion-minded daughters. We have found the best speakers in America who have studied and written on biblical family economics. It's time to work on Plan B, my friends. If you have a family and you are living in the American economy today, you need to check out this Family Economics Conference on March 5th and 6th, 2010. Check it out at kevinswanson.com. That's kevinswanson.com. Check it out now. Back on the Generations Radio broadcast, this is Kevin Swanson. Coming off of the story from Baghdad, 155 people died. Innocent women and children included in the number died because some goofball, some Muslim, lobbed another bomb, I think it was two or three car bombs, and destroyed so much of human life. What devastation, what carnage. And folks, as we read these stories, I think we should be affected by them. This is a violation of the law of God. This is evil. This is wrong. And Dave, this is what the Muslims have been doing from roughly the year 650. This has pretty much marked the Muslims. The Muslims have been a scourge on the whole world since roughly 650 AD.
Yeah, the Muslim religion has. Now, it seems as soon as Muhammad got himself a few men with swords, the peaceful religion wasn't so peaceful anymore. Suddenly, the idea that people would have to submit, and of course that's what Muslim religion means. It means to submit, and submit by force. And the idea of jihad, which took root during the Crusades when Christians came back into the Holy Lands, into the Mideast there, and decided that they were going to defend their brothers in those lands, especially in Jerusalem. The idea of jihad, which was a retaliation against the Christians and the Jews, formed. But it seems that the history of Islam has been always warring, usually with each other. And when they war against the West, that's when we take notice.
Yeah. And it was stopped in, 740 at Tours with Charles Martel. They came down through Spain and tried to wipe out Europe, and Charles Martel stopped them at Tours. And then they were stopped again at the Battle of Malta in, I'm going to guess, roughly 1600. So they were stopped several times. Then you had the pirates of Tripoli, and you had the Muslim scourge again upon much of the world through the piracy of the Tripolian pirates. And now you have the Muslims coming back again. And the reason why is because they have grown. They were only 12% of the world's population in 1900. Now they make up about 23%. It's the second largest religion in the world, second to the Christian religion. There's 1.57 billion Muslims in the world, according to a report mapping the global Muslim population by the Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life. That represents about 23%, folks. And percentage-wise, the Muslims have doubled. And Dave, I think they also control more of the world's nations. In other words, you had a period of colonialization where Europe was much, much stronger militarily through the 1800s. You had all the empires, of course, the European empires, and they were stronger than the Muslims. Now they've gained a great deal of wealth through their oil businesses in Saudi Arabia and elsewhere, and you can bet that money is flowing. You don't even have to open up the newspaper, folks. You just have to look at the front cover, and you're going to find that Muslims are doing bad things. The fruit of a Muslim religion is obvious. It's bad. Just read the newspaper every single day, and you're going to find the fruits of the Muslim religion is anarchy, bloody murder as they kill their women and children everywhere. And even if it's renegades, it's renegades that call themselves fundamentalists. And I don't read much about these guys getting excommunicated by the mullahs and their churches. I don't read the mullahs, 90% of them, standing up and protesting the renegades, Dave. I don't read that anywhere. I don't see them upset about this. I think they just see this as part of their religion. Until you get 90% of these mullahs standing up and saying, enough of this jihad, enough of this bombing of innocent women and children, and we're going to excommunicate these people from all these sects of the Muslim faith. Until that kind of thing happens, Dave, I'm just going to take this as the fruits of the Muslim religion. I mean, occasionally, I'm sure there are Christians who do nasty things. We have occasional Christian who turns anarchical and kills an abortion doctor or something here in this country. And we'll see examples like that, but it's few and far between. I don't think we've had a single one this year in all of America, and America makes up 300-400 million people. So, Dave, not a lot of terrorism happening in this Christian country, but boy, a lot of Muslims are out there killing each other. That does not bode well for the Muslim faith.
It seems as if the Muslims who proselytize by the sword, so they proselytize by violence, most easily find that the disenfranchised populations of the world are the most eager to become Muslim. They're powerless as the Muslims come in to resist them, and they're able to foment a little anger. Now, when you bring the disenfranchised into your midst, and then you stir them up a little bit, you're really playing with fire and gunpowder at the same time.
Yeah, and we see that happening with the Muslim nations, and Dave, more now than ever before. Many of them are responding to the kind of force that is placed upon those nations by the American empire. I understand that. A lot of these guys are reacting. You get the big boy around the block bringing his big bombs and his big guns and his big planes, and chances are you're going to get people getting even more upset and even more committed to their ideology and wanting to fight their jihad against America as well. Now, of course, we responded to what they did to us. And Dave, it wasn't just 9/11. It was a number of other terrorist events. We've responded to their terrorist events, and I think they're responding in like form with their anarchical approach. And the end result, of course, is far more violence around the world. Well, folks, the Muslim religion is violent. Jihad is their sixth pillar. I know they talk about five pillars, but there is the sixth pillar, and that is the pillar of jihad. They believe that jihad is a part of the Muslim faith. Kill the infidels, what the Quran tells them to do, and that's what they do. Folks, Muslims are also deterministic. And when you say deterministic, they say that what they do and what happens on planet Earth is determined ultimately by kismet. And because there is kismet, there is no free will. And if there is no free will, there is no moral responsibility. This is a simple, simple, logical truism, folks. If there is no free will, there is no moral responsibility, therefore anarchy is inevitable, and they have excuses for the most horrific of immoral acts. And that is all part of the Muslim religion. This is why the Muslim religion will never, ever be a strong moralistic faith. It can't be, because it's got a basic metaphysic that includes a hardcore determinism, not allowing for any free will. Now, within the Christian faith, we allow for free will. Man has a free will, and he takes moral responsibility for the choices that he makes. Now, we also acknowledge that God is sovereign over the free actions of men. We have no idea how that happens, but we acknowledge both ends of that. We acknowledge there is a sovereignty about God, but there is also a free will about man, something that the Muslim religion does not acknowledge. Therefore, there is a built-in fault within the Muslim religion whereby these guys cannot develop a system where moral responsibility is even possible, where there is no free will. And Dave, you know, again, we're talking about worldview here. I believe that these basic worldview concepts do affect the way that people live. I know that's something that maybe is a little esoteric and difficult for some people to receive, but that's just the way it works. If you've got a kismet, deterministic system, whatever will be, kind of a system in your Islamic faith, you're going to live that out. And eventually, if you get 1.2 billion of these people running around the world, they're going to self-consciously realize they're not morally responsible for the kind of things they do, the kind of torture, the kind of beheadings, the kind of torment and persecution and killing of innocent women and children that they do. They see no problem with it because there is no moral responsibility. After all, whatever may will be, will be. The Muslims are deterministic, and that affects their moral outlook on life.
This is not too dissimilar from what happened in some of the later Crusades when knights would get a absolution from any sin, future sins. And so they were morally not responsible for any sin that they would commit, and these knights would go and terrorize even the Europeans on their way to the Crusades. What happens when man is removed completely from the responsibility of his sin is sin abounds. And Paul was very clear. Should we sin that grace should abound all the more? Well, of course not. By no means we should. But Islam has a bit of this going on inside of it. What's more is Islam is an external religion. They do not believe that Allah can see the hearts of men. In fact, they would find that offensive, that he would be so voyeuristic to know what they're thinking. All he sees is external obedience. So as long as they go to Mecca, as long as they do their prayers, they don't even have to be praying. They can be thinking about designing a deck out on their porch. But as long as they're bowing down three times a day, Allah is satisfied. It's very external. Way, way different than the view that we have of Yahweh, who knows the heart of men, who discerns the heart of men, who cares about the heart of men.
And Dave, I think you're touching on the doctrine of Mukhalafa, and that's where Allah presents himself as so different, so distinct from his creatures, that he cannot be described in terms of any category of their experience. That is, Allah is not knowable, and Allah doesn't really know us, meaning that there is such a transcendence about Allah. He's so up there and beyond us that he cannot in any way relate to us. I asked a taxi driver who's a Muslim fella one time, do you love Allah? And he couldn't answer the question. He didn't. Allah is not one you have a personal relationship with. You can't possibly know Allah. He can't possibly know you in a relational sense. Therefore, there is no relationship with Allah. He is so transcendent, he cannot be immanent. And therefore, if he is so transcendent, he cannot be immanent, he cannot share his mind with men, which means the entire Quran ought to be destroyed tomorrow. Yeah, just get rid of it, because Allah is so transcendent, he cannot share his knowledge, what he knows, his will to man. He is just that transcendent. He is not knowable, and therefore his will and his mind cannot be knowable. See, these are internal contradictions that lie within the Muslim system and probably should be pointed out in a gentle way to those of you who have Muslim friends. Point these things out to them. Show them some of the internal contradictions that lie within their system. Also show that in terms of morality, Christian love and sacrifice is really the way that the world is won. And Dave, you know, there are two distinct worldviews that we bring up again and again on this program. There is the worldview of power and submission and coercion. And that, of course, is constantly used by big governments and socialist states all over the world. Humanists are big on power states. They change issues, change systems. They bring, quote-unquote, salvation. They solve our problems for us by means of the power of the state, the power to tax, the power to coerce, the power to manipulate masses. And this is what the humanists do, but it's what the Muslims do too. They are a power-driven society, and they will save the world by means of the sword and by power. But that, my friends, is not our modus operandi. Our modus operandi is love. Our modus operandi is relationships. We change the world by fathers loving their sons and loving their daughters and loving their God enough to disciple their children concerning the Word of God and teaching their children how to love each other and how to honor mom and dad and love God with all their heart, soul, mind, and strength. We teach love. And we think as we teach love, as we adopt the orphan, as we teach love to our children in our homes, we're going to change the world far more profoundly than any of these statist approaches, whether it be the Islam or the humanist approach. Folks, our modus operandi is completely different
because
than the other worldviews.
Because our God is completely different. Not only can we know the thoughts of God, our God knows what it means to be a man because our God became man and then gave up his life for man. Think of the first murder in the Bible. When Cain killed his brother Abel, God required a blood sacrifice after the fall. Cain did not give a blood sacrifice. God refused to sacrifice. So he sacrificed his brother. He killed his brother rather than giving God what God desired, a blood sacrifice. That blood sacrifice was to be a picture of the Lord Jesus Christ, God incarnate, man, true man, who gave himself up, sacrificed himself for us. That's our God.
And that, my friend, is how he changed the world. It happened by love and by sacrifice. That's how he changed the hearts of men. That's how he redeemed the world. That's how he regenerated everything. My friends, it happened by love and by sacrifice. And that's what the Muslims do not understand. If you want to interact with this program, just email me at host@kevinswanson.com. And you can hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to cast a vision for the next generation.